Welcome to the Prac Ready podcast, clinical education in one coffee. Matt Cooper here, joined by Craig Taylor. Morning, Craig.
Morning again, Matt.
Good to see you, all looking resplendent in your lycra again.
Thank you very much. Tell you about your doggies.
we'll move on from that. Now, Craig, today I wanted to talk a little bit about exercise prescription and just some general things that new graduates and people moving into practicing can look for, and some strategies that they can work with their patients. It's one thing that you certainly notice as a clinical educator that students, whilst they're trying to grasp some of the exercise concepts and the rehab concepts, that they struggle to find the specific exercises that, you know, your patient's going to do. And that can have some flow-on effects into things like compliance and healing outcomes.
Yeah, and just looking at realistic expectations with our patients and where we're going to take that rehab plan. And we're all, I feel the university system is very good at giving people all the tools to rehab people with, but what we see is that there isn't a great way of integrating that. You get a cookie cutter kind of approach, and everyone with this kind of back pain ends up with these three exercises. And is that actually a good use of that patient's time, / do they have the ability to complete those tasks?
Yeah, look, and I think it begins realistically with the patient's expectations. You know, what do they want to achieve? What do they want to get back to? You know, if you have someone who's, realistically just looking for a comfortable night's sleep compared to someone who wants to do an Ironman, there's obviously a very big difference there in terms of what you're trying to achieve and what you want the patient wants to get from that.
Yeah, and what's the patient's load already? Like, if they are training for something significant, then they're going to have less free time available to do a specific rehab protocol. They may have the willpower or the desire and adherence, but are you overloading them with extra rehab that's going to then be just extra training load that might cause other fatigue related problems, knowing that, you know, the amount of total stress we're putting into the system, be it mental or physical stress, is going to be a factor to overload type injuries in particular.
Yeah, and it's a really, really good point. And I think realistically, when you get to that point with your patient, what you really need to ask them straight off the bat is, you know, what do you want to achieve from today? And it might be something along the lines as simply as, you know, a pain reduction, or it could be, well, I'm looking at playing 18 holes of golf on the weekend. And so you're trying to fit your rehab into that. And I think the one thing that we tend to find, Craig, is when you bombard a patient with, you know, half a dozen exercises, it really has a flow-on effect to compliance there, and patients will not do one, let alone six, because you've almost overwhelmed them with the amount of information that you've given them. So do you tend to have any sort of general rules that you follow in terms of exercises for patients, just talking generally?
Yeah, having that open discussion first and foremost with them about, you know, what's a realistic amount of time that they're going to commit to it, and do they want a specific routine that's set aside for them to train? Maybe it's part of their warm-up for their normal training. Or are they looking for things that will just integrate into their general lifestyle, things that they can do while they're waiting for another task to occur or while they're on their way to work or something like that? So really identifying what's this patient's motivation first and foremost. Leading on from there, for a majority of my patients, I would be hesitant to give them more than two or three rehabilitation exercises. And I would say three is unusual for me to prescribe out. And we're really like to focus with my patients that, you know, simple doesn't mean that it's a bad exercise.
Yes.
And we've all seen on the social networks, there is a lot of people putting up all these complicated, very demanding rehab protocols that, as you know, ex-physio account or ex-osteo account or whatever, that makes them look intelligent and makes them think, yeah, well, look at all this complicated stuff that your patient can do. But in reality, getting them to do something very simple and achievable and building upon that is going to be much more realistic for most patients and requires very little tools is something else that I look at.
Absolutely. Like, to me, it just comes back to, I want to get them moving. And, you know, it sounds so simple, but, you know, a lot of people are hesitant around their pain. They might be fearful of moving because they think they're doing more damage. So your education process obviously has to try and alleviate some of that fear. But then beyond that, it can be a real simple functional movement, like something as simple as, hey, go for a walk, just to get that knee moving a bit better, or you know, doing some real basic non-weight-bearing exercise or something along those lines. So I'm not specifically looking at those seven muscle groups that I want to use together to do a complex range of motion thing, whereas my targeted goal might just be to increase a range of motion.
Yeah, and if we think about that and the multimodal effects of exercise, we don't even have to call it exercise with our patients. We can just talk about sort of incorporating into the activities of daily living. There are other side effects that we can achieve by giving them something as simple as going for a walk. There are, you know, our natural abilities of our body to combat pain from a androgenous opioid release. You've got the top-down effect, or basically the master control that's going to inhibit pain symptoms when you're doing something you enjoy, which then leads me on to, very rarely would I stop a patient from participating in their normal activities. So trying to figure out a way where they can still go to their normal activities that they do, but achieve it in a way that's minimally irritating for them.
Yep.
Rather than saying, you need to have a 2-week break, which then may isolate them from their support network. It might be their outlet from their stress from work or from home. There's all those other effects are then being brought into the game if you say you need to stop doing this for 2 weeks.
I think it's a really important point, and you know, it comes back to focusing on what they can do. You know, I don't tend to go the negative way. You know, I won't say, oh, we can't do this and this. I don't think that helps the situation at all. And you bring it back to basics of what, hey, look, no, I'm fine with you getting back in the pool, but you might have to modify, or you might have to do a different stroke or something along those lines. But they're still swimming. They're still getting that activity there. So it's a really important point that you make, Craig, and it's something that you know, you do hear, unfortunately, in the health professions is quite alarmist sort of descriptions of issues, and you know, you just have to read a newspaper to see, you know, see the new alarmist headline for the week. And so, you know, as a practitioner, you kind of need to rise above that, I think, and you need to explain in a way that the patient's going to understand, but then tie it into what they're, not what your goals are, but what their goals are. So, you know, once again, we always talk about in our practice the significant event. You know, why did they come in for this issue? And most of the time you'll find there is something, you know, and whether it's, you know, I just want to be able to go back to the gym, or, you know, I said I want to play golf, or I'm playing, got footy finals coming up, or whatever it is, then tying your goals into that to help them get to what they want to achieve.
Yeah. And so, leading on from that, with something like going for a walk or continuing to do their normal swim class but at a reduced load, maybe it's having some breaks between their strokes, or having some kind of modified intensity. What other things would you give your patient in terms of how they complete it, and how do you supervise/teach them how to do their rehab?
Yeah, look, it's a great question. Generally, we have a lot of tools at our disposal now, you know, and I think the best tool is simply an iPhone or something along those lines. So I make sure the patient always leaves with a detailed explanation of the exercise I want them to do. If they are capable and they have a phone capable, I will generally record them on their phone And get them to set reminders within their phone as well. You know, and if it's just a couple of exercises, I'll verbally coach them through them doing the exercise. So they've actually got a visual. And I think that kind of helps them connect what they were feeling at the time to what it should look like as well. And so, you know, I can coach them around their posture, around the movement, what they should be looking for, what they should be aware of, and make sure that they're doing that as well. The other thing I like to do is I'll follow up with an email as well. And so what that looks like is it will have, you know, what the diagnosis is, what the prognosis is, what short and medium term goals. I don't tend to do long term. I think the patient knows about long term. And realistically, if I'm following through my recommended plan to them, long term comes to the fore a bit later on anyway, after that first day. So I feel like they, although I'm not, you know, they're taking them through the exercises, I've offered every bit of support that I can, both verbally and written. And then conversely, if it's a new acute patient, for example, I just think it's absolutely paramount that you call them the next day, okay, and you recheck in, reconfirm what you've told that patient, maybe reconfirm the exercises, really quick, you know, minute, 2 minute conversation. How are you feeling today? You know, do you have any questions about the diagnosis of X? You know, how are you going to go with those exercises? You know, today is the day you should start doing those and try and fit it into a time of the day. The other thing I also try and give patients is tools in regards to connecting their exercises to something that they do every day. And I think that's can be a little bit challenging for people because they'll often forget to do exercise. So I tend to tie it in with, you know, maybe after a shower, you know, if you watch the news at night, doing it during the news or something along those lines. So something that they do every day, so they've got another reminder, oh, crikey, yeah, I need to do those exercises.
Yeah. Something you just mentioned there about calling them and having a chat.
Mm.
I think a lot of healthcare professionals have, and I definitely have this at sometimes with the acute ones, is there's a fear around calling them because what if they haven't responded as you expect them to? And people, if you're messaging well to your patients and describing the process well to your patients, if they do react poorly to your interventions, then that's okay. It's not an ideal outcome, but it's okay. But having the conversation about it is much better than them worrying about it for, you know, 3 or 4 days till they see you again.
Yeah.
So making that phone call initially is hard, but you get used to it. And there are positives and negatives. Yeah,
and it's a significant learning tool as a new practitioner as well. And I think it's one thing that, you know, we both find in the clinical teaching situation, Craig, is that, you know, unfortunately, you know, you might only be in a shift for once a week and you may need to see that patient within 3 or 4 days, and it doesn't really allow you to do that. And it's a habit that new graduates need to get out of pretty quickly. And so if you see someone quite acute on a Monday, you know, you should be calling them on the Tuesday and hopefully seeing them on that Thursday or Friday. So you can get that sort of follow through and help them along their way there.
Another thing we should talk about when we're talking about exercise or rehabilitation is patients' pain levels.
Mm.
Do you have any thoughts around what to explain to your patients around how they should feel during their exercise?
Yeah, look, I think, let's just start with a patient's perception of pain. I really think most patients see no pain good, pain bad, that simply. And when I say pain bad, I think, you know, they think pain damaging or pain re-injury sort of thing. And so first thing comes straight back to education. And I use some broad measurements. You know, I might say something along the lines of, look, I'm actually happy for you to work through a little bit of pain with this exercise, and then put a number on it. You know, most patients can relate to a 2 out of 10 or a 3 out of 10. And you know, we know with things like tendinopathies, you actually need to load those structures, which might be a little bit uncomfortable. So, you know, there's obviously case specific, but you'll see patients almost their demeanor changes when you say things like this, because they automatically assume, oh, it hurts why I'm doing it. I must be doing damage.
Yeah, and I'll even just on some of that language then, even I would say to the patient, what is an acceptable amount of pain for you to feel while you're doing
question,
activity?
Yeah.
Rather than me saying, you should feel a 4 out of 10 pain while you do this exercise. Because we know that everyone has different pain thresholds too. Mm. And if you're empowering them and you're explaining the process of the injury at a level that they understand, then they will maybe talk to you about, no, I actually feel comfortable doing this at a 5 out of 10 because I know that it's not making me worse.
I think, and it is a delicate balance, because you do have those people who will treat their pain like a bit of a badge of honour, you know, yeah. And they think, oh, well, I can push through that.
Got such a high pain tolerance.
Yeah, and it's like, well, maybe you shouldn't be actually doing that because you have a reasonably significant injury. And so, once again, it comes back to education and expectation. And so if you can make sure that your patient leaves with as much detail as they need, and that you're trying to give them the tools for them to help with their own healing. But, you know, I'm sure we both, and I certainly can remember the amount of people who would say, oh, you know, I was feeling great, so I did this. And that was never in the picture, you know, and they've just come back so much worse because of it.
I just wanted to test it out.
Yes.
Yeah. And then flowing through to having a real conversation around pain versus function and how our function can continue to increase, yet our pain levels can remain, you know, at the absolute the same. And so really trying to draw them back to... Yes, your pain is still a 4 out of 10 when you do this movement, but look how much more of that movement you can achieve before the pain sets in. And really messaging to your patients that if you can improve that function over time, the pain will follow rather than waiting for the pain to disappear and then the function to increase.
And I think there's an adaptation to that, isn't there? There's certain little things that you can do to tweak it. And like as soon as you're saying that, I was thinking of shoulder issues. You know, they might really struggle to go up against gravity. Whereas if you might get them down, say, on their hands and knees or something, and they're sliding through a range of motion... And they're actually able to achieve greater range of motion because the vectors on that joint are completely different. And it changes their fear, yeah, of the movement. You know, and you can show patients aren't silly. They can see, oh, actually I can almost get that full range in a position where, you know, I'm not having to push up above my head, but I'm sliding the arm into a certain movement.
Yeah, and I love having that conversation with patients around, you know, there is fear around movements that have hurt, and especially if they've had recurrent injuries to the same area where they are, you know, becoming fearful of doing certain movements. They're leaning forward to pick something up off the ground is one of those classic activities that everyone does in their day-to-day life, like putting their shoes on. Yet, if they become fearful of putting their shoes on, that becomes the trigger. Now, I've got to put my shoes on. Oh, no, my back's going to hurt.
Yes.
As opposed to being able to do it in other ways and just trying to figure out with your patient, okay, well, if that's a triggering event, maybe we can look at ways to use that as your rehab. First thing in the morning, you've got to put your shoes on to go to work. Let's alter it so that it's no longer your trigger.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And a brilliant point. Look, Craig, I think we might finish up there. Good conversation. Really enjoyed that. If you've got any questions for the team at Prac Ready, please be sure to email us at pracready@gmail.com, or you can DM us on Instagram, which is @PracReady. We appreciate you listening.
And just update, we've got our Patreon account up and running, and it's an easy way for you to support us with very minimal outlay. You can become a member of our coffee club, which is... for the price of one coffee a month, You can help support us doing this podcast. And what that'll allow us to do is maybe get a few more guests in that can give you guys more of an insight. And of course, we're always really excited and looking to learn from your feedback. So any information that you can give us that you think will help with the outcomes of this podcast, that would be muchly appreciated.
Yeah, brilliant. All right, thanks, Craig. Have a good day.
Thanks, Maddie.
All right, see ya.